Yelton, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a late in the week edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. We're in week three now, so you know the drill. We do the mailbag on Tuesday. Later in the week, we preview the upcoming Texans game, and then you get reaction to it immediately after the post-game show is over here. So three podcasts a week, barring an emergency, three podcasts a week. And when there's an emergency, we do more podcasts here, not less. So that's how we go. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. You can catch Seth and I 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays on the radio or, of course, on the Odyssey app, on YouTube and Twitch. You can also find podcasts of the show if you're not an early riser, wherever it is you get your podcast. The Payne and Pendergast podcast doing very, very well right now. So it's Texans-Vikings week three. I don't think a lot of people had both these teams being 2-0 on their bingo card at the beginning of the football season. Maybe the Texans, but I doubt the Vikings. But that is why, for a special occasion, I am bringing in right now my producer of this podcast, Anthony Irwin, who produces numerous podcasts for the Odyssey Podcast Network, has his own podcast, big Lakers guy, big Minnesota Vikings guy, and lives in Austin, Texas. So I have no idea what to make of your sports pedigree, Anthony, but this may be the first time this audience hears your name all the time, because I thank you at the end of every episode for producing the podcast, but this may be the first time that they are, I say this may be the first time they're seeing you, but man, when that J.J. Redick news was popping, you were all over the place, man. You were like Woj Jr. Back then.
Yeah, that was an interesting stretch of my life. I never want to report anything ever again.
Neither does Woj. Neither does Woj. He retired yesterday.
He has it right. He's like, you know what? You know what's a lot easier than reporting? NIL.
Yeah. Dude, that's saying something too, because that NIL is that's the wild, wild west, man. Yep. So before we get into this matchup, just for purposes of this podcast audience, you've got multiple podcasts you produce and you've got podcasts that you host. You've been on both sides of this thing.
Yeah, I host Lakers Lounge, and then I have another show that we're launching here in the next week or so called Basketball Passport. That's a look at basketball, not just in the NBA, but around the world. Covered the Dodgers in my past. You know, I wrote about football right when my career was getting going. Always been passionate about my Vikings, even though they seem to hate me personally. I just love sports. I just see everything about sports is just great. And getting to produce your show has been a blast.
Oh, that's cool, man. Well, you do a great job with it. I appreciate it. You make me look good. So I really appreciate that. Before we get into previewing this game, how did you become a Minnesota Vikings fan? Why Minnesota Vikings?
So, long story short, I was really, really young. And at the time the Rams weren't, and I'm from Southern California originally, moved to Austin a few years ago because we could buy a house out here. And, so originally when I was growing up, the Rams weren't local. The Raiders weren't local. There was no local football team. My mom liked the Cowboys, but I don't know. And they were like kind of cool in the 90s, but I just never really felt all that connected to them. Dad liked the Rams, but they were out in St. Louis. Again, didn't feel all that connected to them. You can see the Kobe thing behind me. I'm a lifelong Lakers and Dodgers fan, and there was this football team that wore purple and gold. And when I was super young, I thought they were like cousins, you know? And it turns out I was kind of right, because the Lakers originally were from Minneapolis. So, you know, that was when I was really, really young. And then when I was about 10 years old and really started getting into sports, that purple and gold team had Randy Moss, had Dante Culpepper, had like this just insane team that really captivated my and caught my attention. And at my own pain and suffering ever since, they've just kept it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think. I'm doing the math. Are you old enough to have gotten mad at Gary Anderson for missing that field goal that would have sent them to the Super Bowl? Okay, I'm just checking. I didn't know how old
you were. That's one of like a handful of times that I've ever cried about sports, like sad cry. I was like, you know, 9 or 10 or so in that range. And that team was 15-1. They would have, you know, should have beaten Atlanta. I thought they would have had a good chance against Denver again, you know, remembering this through purple and gold colored glasses.
Sure.
But I thought they had a good chance there. They were easily one of the best teams in the league. And Anderson hadn't missed a kick all year. He was nails. He was Kaimi Fairbairn, just without the extent of the leg. No, he misses that one. He hooks that one, I think he hooked it. And then Atlanta's kicker, Anderson made their kick and they advanced and ruined my life for like the next, you know, year or
so. Yeah, that wasn't my goal with this question, was to make you relive all these horrific things from your childhood. I promise you that. I just wanted the audience to have some context as to who exactly, you know, that we're going to be discussing this game with here. So your Vikings fandom goes way back. So you've got you got a lot of scars, you know, just like we Texan fans have a lot of scars. All right. Well, before we get into, a quick reminder too, we didn't do this, but a reminder, if you're listening to the podcast, hit the subscribe button. We'll remind you again later on, but the subscribe button, give us a rating, give us a review. Podcast is growing. We feel good about it. And so, especially now that the Texans are 2-0, feel fantastic about it. So hit that subscribe button. And a quick reminder too, if you want to hit us with an email, HOUmailbag@gmail.com is where you can hit us. We'll do a mailbag episode on Tuesday this week. Before we get into the six pack and the nuance of the game, and for the loyal listeners know, every Friday as a preview, I do the six pack, which is six things, you know, for the upcoming game for the Texans. I thought it'd be fun to have Anthony on, given his diehard Viking fandom, and we'll do a collective six pack where we each take three from the perspective of our teams and we can kick it back and forth and discuss those here. How surprised, I mean, you got to be surprised they're 2-0, just given the mere fact that the 49ers were the week 2 opponent in this whole thing, right?
Yeah, I didn't have very lofty expectations for this team. You know, obviously you go from Kirk Cousins to Sam Darnold, and I'm not even the biggest Kirk Cousins guy, but, you know, Sam Darnold just hasn't really stuck anywhere for a reason. KOC, he tends to do a really good job of getting the most out of quarterbacks for at least a couple weeks. The Pastronaut last year is kind of the nth degree example. And then this year, what they've done is essentially, you know, Daniel Hunter is on Houston now.
Yeah.
So what essentially the Vikings have done is they had their, you know, big money free agents that they lost, and they just spent that money across the rest of the roster. And I think it's made for a lot more balance throughout, even if there aren't such superstars at those two positions.
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover with these two teams. I mean, the two of the guys you went and spent that free agency money on were stalwarts of the Texans defense last year with Blake Cashman and Jonathan Greenard, who had a big season last year.
Yeah.
And I know Cashman has flashed pretty well. I've not watched enough to see what Grenard's done. I do know that their defense, the Vikings defense, is causing all sorts of havoc right now in the backfields for opposing teams. And I'm assuming Grenard's been a big part of that too.
Yeah, they've both been really impressive. Grenard, like, the thing about Daniel Hunter is that, like, he's very, very good at applying pressure at, you know, on the quarterback or like in a specific spot. And sometimes what I would get kind of frustrated with him is if he wasn't getting to the quarterback, he wasn't necessarily wreaking havoc elsewhere. I think Grenard's a little bit better at kind of the more generalized pressure that, you know, just kind of annoys offenses enough. And those are kind of Brian Flores' type of players. It's just the guys that just throws a wrench into whatever the offense is trying to do. And then Flores is also doing incredible stuff schematically, showing so many guys up at the line, dropping guys back, you know, sending blitzes from different levels in the defense. It's been really fun to watch him get to play with, because he was already good with the defense last year, and I think the personnel is even better this year. And you've really seen what he can do. The Niners never really looked all that comfortable.
No, they didn't. That's the concern. We'll dig into this game in a second here, but I think that's a big concern for the Texans this weekend. Injuries at the center and running back positions, which we'll talk about, and the fact that it's you know, literally practically the same playbook that is run by the Texans that the 49ers run. I mean, Bobby Slowick is steeped in that, and D'Amico Ryans are steeped in that 49ers university there, we'll call it, because that's what it feels like. They put so many guys out into the league, that Kubiak Shanahan system. Before we get into the previewing the actual game, have the first 2 weeks, well, first of all, two-part question. One, what was your prediction for this season for the Vikings coming into the season record-wise? And two, has the first 2 weeks of the season changed your perspective on the overall season so far?
Yeah, I would say heading in, I was probably looking at like a 6 or 7 win season. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my hopes particularly high. They actually have a pretty tough schedule, you know.
That division is very, very good.
Well, and then your non-division games are the Texans and the Niners, and you know, it's just it's a kind of a tough schedule. It's a younger team. It's a team, you know, with you know, iffy quarterback play with Darnold, and then JJ is going to miss the entire year too, which I actually think works out in his favor. Stroud, I think, is kind of the outlier that proves the rule. I think that these guys probably do need a year or so to figure out the sport. You just saw Caleb Williams look the way that he did against the Texans defense too. So, I didn't have particularly high hopes, and I don't know if it is the two wins. NFL wins are funny because your team wins a game and you feel like they're never going to win or lose ever again.
Yeah.
It's like winning a playoff game in basketball or a playoff game in baseball, where you're like, this team is great. And I'm trying not to fall too victim to that, but I just think that the balanced approach to all of this, and so long as Darnold doesn't make too many mistakes so that KOC's offense and Flores' defense can kind of carry the day, I think they're going to be pretty good. I think they're going to stay in this fight for this really tough NFC North division.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. I mean, the Bears have a really tough defense. I think, you know, Caleb Williams, there's going to be growing pains, and we've seen that the first couple weeks. Jordan Love, the knee injury, I mean, I've heard anywhere from he could be back this weekend to they may sit him out a few more weeks. And the Packers were, it's funny, the Packers don't get treated like a team that was 9-8 last year because they were so good in the second half of the season. But the fact of the matter was they were, you know, they had a good stretch at the end of the year, and so did Jordan Love. But that's not a, you know, that's not a sample size. That's not a sample size that I'm comfortable with putting the Packers above some of the teams that people are putting them above right now.
There was like Jordan Love MVP buzz, and I don't know. Like, he didn't look great in the first half of the year, and I think it's some recency bias. The last we saw of the Packers is what people are going to base it off of, but. You know, the thing about progress is it's never linear. Teams are going to take steps forward, and teams are going to have runs, and then they're going to take steps backwards and sideways and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what I actually give D'Amico Ryans a ton of credit for, is that, like, even while, you know, because I've been editing all of your shows and listening to you talk about them, even while expectations for the Texans are maybe higher than they've ever been organizationally, he's quick to say, like, you know, we still have a ways to go. We still have a ton of work that we need to do on both sides of the ball. And I think with the Packers, because they went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, and then now Jordan Love, you know, looks pretty good. People are just like, oh, great. The Packers are back, you know, automatically.
They have
some holes too, you know, and if Love misses time, then they really have some holes.
Yeah. As far as the Texans go, like, they have not played their A game either these first 2 weeks. I think that's the thing that has, you know, they were against the Colts. They gave up huge chunk plays to Anthony Richardson and a blocked punt that literally led to all four of the Colts' touchdowns. Each of their touchdown drives had a 50-plus yard play, or was the actual touchdown, 60-yard touchdown, 54. And then they had a blocked punt inside the Texans' own 5, set up a touchdown. And then last week, which the whole nation got to see, the good and the bad with the Texans. 12 penalties, really undisciplined. The run game wasn't great. So I think that actually, in my mind and in Texan fans' mind, I think actually has Texan fans more excited moving forward, and they're like, wow, they're 2-0, and there's a whole lot that they can improve upon. Where have the Vikings played in terms of what you feel like their ceiling is these first couple of weeks?
They're playing above the ceiling somehow.
Above the ceiling, you know? Right. Yeah. So it's house money right now.
It really is. I mean, like, they've benefited from some chunk play, like the chunk play of the season, right? The 99-yard bomb to Justin Jefferson,
right.
and you know, they've turned the ball, they've turned other teams over really well.
That's big.
That said, like, Darnold has had a tough turnover in the red zone. Weirdly, their new running back, whose name?
Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones, thank you. Yeah. He fumbled the ball in the red zone. And so they've had to overcome some adversity too. But they're playing is about as well as I could have possibly hoped at the start of this year. So it's going to be interesting. I would agree with you. Like the number one thing that, and we'll get to like the six pack here in a second, but the number one thing that like I've taken away from watching the Texans play is, cause I do like, you know, as I've paid attention to your show and as I prepare to edit your show and get ready for the things that you're going to be talking about. And just cause I love football, I watch a ton of the Texans and, their O-line leaves a little bit to, you know, that's the part that like, I'm really kind of looking forward to this week is how is Brian Flores going to confuse and annoy that line this week. And you know, you can have all the skill players in the world, which the Texans do. Their wide receiver core is for my money, top three, maybe not even three. You know, they have Mixon who's run the ball well so far this year, but if your line isn't playing the way that it needs to, it really just kind of sticks everything in the mud. So I as they get better, and I think they will, I think that's when the Texans are going to look damn near overwhelming.
Yeah, that, like how they looked in week one against the Colts. As it turns out, that may have been more the Colts than it was the Texans that were the reason why Joe Mixon ran for almost 160 yards. But if they can get to that, you know, certainly that'll be, yeah, I mean, they're going to be awfully tough to beat. They're going to be tough to beat anyways, but if they can run the football with regularity, they're going to be really tough to beat. All right, let's get into the pregame six pack then. I've got Anthony Irwin, my producer for this podcast, and for several podcasts, host of his own podcast, and diehard Minnesota Vikings fan. I'm a cordial host. I let my guests go first, so we'll go back and forth. We'll dueling piano this thing. But you give me your first can in the six pack here, your first key for this game from a Vikings perspective.
It has to be Brian Flores against CJ Stroud. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Stroud is still young. He's way mature beyond his years. But you know, if Flores can, the thing that he does is, especially if he gets to third and long situations, you know, you hear the cliche of defensive coordinators pinning their ears back, but I feel like he stapled his ears back. Like it's the way it's just, they're just perpetually stuck on the
side of his ears to his cranium. Yes.
Yeah. And he just loves it when he gets those opportunities in third and long or even fourth and short situations against the Niners. He was doing some really, really cool things, sending different guys from different angles and stuff. So if Flores is able to get the Texans to third and long, and he's able to send blitzes while also containing Stroud, because Stroud's such a great athlete, that's how Minnesota stays in this game.
Yeah, I think the last part, you nailed something there, because CJ Stroud's not viewed as an athletic quarterback per se, but he is really good at maneuvering the pocket, and he's really good at rolling. He's really good at rolling either way. But boy, when he starts rolling to his right and Nico Collins starts playing playground games with him there, they are awfully, awfully dangerous. No doubt about that. And a little Brian Flores nugget here is, you know, as long as we're talking about like, hey, this guy used to play for the Vikings, these guys used to play for the Texans. Brian Flores, finalist for the Texans head coaching job back in 2022. When Lovie Smith ended up getting the job, and what happened? Brian Flores added the Houston Texans to his lawsuit. And so, which I think is still outstanding, right. I'm not mistaken. So, so we've got even like a little bit of soap opera going on right there with Flores and the Texans.
Yeah. He'll probably take some particular enjoyment out of it, but like, it's hard not to look at the stuff that Tua said about Brian Flores and not take that into account with like the head coaching stuff. Some guys are just great at being coordinators. That, you know, people top out.
Some guys, So, but also I would say too, Anthony, not to get too far into the weeds on the Flores stuff, but I would also say too, some quarterbacks respond to the type of coaching that Brian Flores administers. Tua also just true. Wasn't one of them. It's Brian yeah. Flores' job to read the room and know what type of coaching your guy can take. You know what I mean? And yeah. so I think it can work both ways. So Flores Absolutely. Is the first key, the first key for you. I'm going to open my first can on the six pack here, and I'm going to stick with the Texans offensively going against Flores defense. I am very concerned about them finding a run game this weekend, not just because the Vikings have a very good defense, but the Texans are banged up now. Their Yep. top two centers and their top two running backs, both non-practice participants yesterday. Now, we'll see what today has to hold. By the time people are listening to this, we may have gotten news out of the Texans practice here for Thursday. Thursday is always a very key day because usually Friday is just sort of a walkthrough to get ready for the game. But Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson, the Texans' top two centers, both non-practice. And then Joe Mixon, of course, hurt his ankle in the Bears game. And Damian Pierce, who's the number two running back, who, of course, had the spectacular rookie year a couple of years ago. He missed the Bears game on Sunday. Damian did with a hamstring. Neither of them practiced yesterday. So we could be looking at a situation that has Kendrick Green, not Kenyon Green, the left guard, Kendrick Green, former Pittsburgh Steeler, starting at center for the Texans, with Cam Akers, former short timer with the Vikings, as the starting
tailback. Great for the Vikings too. Who's a bone when he blew his Achilles? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So he's a very shifty guy. I'm always like, we've seen Kirk kind of struggle coming back from the Achilles. We've seen Rodgers struggle coming off of the Achilles, and you know they're older guys. They aren't as athletic. Akers was a super athlete at his kind of peak.
Yeah.
But yeah, the run game is really going to be interesting because if they aren't able to kind of sustain that and hold on to the ball, and because that was actually the one way that the Niners were actually taking it to the Vikings is, I mean, it's Shanahan's run game is just always going to be elite almost no matter who's back there.
Yeah.
But you know, when the Niners were able to get, you know, piece drives together, it came with, you know, chunk runs and then timely throws from Purdy that you know, often felt like they should have been interceptions, but they weren't. And then, you know, they were down there in the red zone faster than you could blink. So not having Mixon, not having Pierce, and then relying on Akers, who is still less than a year removed from that Achilles, you know, I'm really kind of curious how they're going to kind of make up for that and like the short throw parts of the scheme to kind of try to make up for not running as well as they should.
Yeah, we've been calling on on our radio show this week, we've been calling those long handoffs, basically just the short passing game. They've got to find a way to get in second and three and second and two, you know, like that's what kept the Bears in the game last week on Sunday night. If you go back and look at, like, I keep notes of every series in a notebook, and you go back and I circle long yardage situations with down and distance, and there's second and eight, second and 12. So the only touchdown the Texans scored was a second and 23 because Nico Collins got a penalty for punching Tyreek Stevenson and, you know, kind of pushing him in the helmet there. So they've got to, especially on the road in that atmosphere, they've got to keep it in manageable down and distance situations, even with a superstar quarterback like CJ Stroud, because he can overcome those. He can overcome those second and 12s and third and 15s as good as any quarterback in the league, but that is no way to be playing poker on the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Especially, you know, with a defense that is so in sync with its defensive coordinator. Yeah. You know, it's a lot to ask when you know, because then you can really limit certain things. And once, like, that was always Bill Belichick's strength, right? Is he would basically take away your option A and force you to figure out options B, C, and like live off of options B, C, and D. And once a defense is able to do that, it just really wreaks havoc on everything else.
I'll get to old Belichick and that theory in just a little bit here. Maybe All right. my next can in the six pack here, but you're up now, my friend. Go ahead. What's your second key here from a Viking standpoint?
Well, it's kind of inversing it. It's the Vikings O-line, which has actually played really well to this point against the speed that the Texans have. The Texans, the thing that kept driving me insane watching that game, even like as somebody who was rooting against the Bears for divisional purposes, but they kept on trying to like get out lateral and get outside of the Texans and then try to get vertical. And the Texans are just way too fast for that. Houston is just way too fast across the board defensively. And You know, they also were very, very good at gashing the defense, getting into the cracks, creating cracks, and then getting into them. And so far, the Vikings O-line has handled that kind of stuff pretty well. But I don't think they've faced a defense quite as fast as Houston to this point.
Yeah, across the board. I mean, they've edge, you know, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson along the edge, and even the backups they have, they're older guys, but they're accomplished. They have Jerry Hughes and Derek Barnett are their backup defensive ends, but the linebackers, yeah, the Texans went exclusively with two linebackers that entire game against the Bears because they've got Jalen Petrie playing up in the box for most of the game. Number five, the safety who was bringing the wood on Sunday in that game. He almost functions as their third linebacker out there because he's such a willing, he loves contact. So you had him, you've got Azeez Alshire, who was the scourge of Chicago after the game, after he tattooed Caleb Williams a couple times. And then they had Henry Toa-Toa, who has kind of been, you know, Christian Harris was supposed to be the third linebacker. He's on the injured reserve right now. Toa-Toa, also an Alabama kid, who came back a little lighter this year and is just, he's been a heat-seeking missile out there. So you're right. That front seven for the Texans is pretty fierce, and they're going to need to be. Aaron Jones has run the ball pretty well so far this year, 5.5 yards a carry.
Their backup looked really, really good. Actually looked better than Jones last weekend. It was really interesting. Chandler Jones, I think, is the guy's name.
Oh, Ty Chandler. Is it Ty Chandler?
Thank you.
Chandler. Yeah.
It was like, I honestly think that Jones, and I've been like, I have a couple friends who cover the Vikings just, you know, through connections that I've made over the years. And I asked specifically, like, Jones has to be coaching Chandler up because this is a completely different runner than I saw from last year. They said that they do spend a lot of time together, you know, preaching patience, hitting the hole hard, getting vertical, getting downhill as fast as you can. And Chandler looked incredible last week. So, and you know, they honestly are going to have to, like, this was kind of on my cutting room floor, but, or no, it isn't. No, it's a later six pack. So I'll leave it alone for now, but they need to run the ball the way that they have so far this year.
All right. I'll do my second one here in the six pack here. And I'll go to, this is kind of a partially Justin Jefferson can in the six pack, and then kind of hearkening back to week one against the Colts where they gave up so many big plays. Cause it's not just Jefferson. I mean, you know, they've got other big play threats on that team, but I do think, like, to me, it's mostly about Jefferson, especially in the wake of that 97 yard touchdown last week. It's just such a reminder of what he's capable of, like breaking the game open, regardless of where the Vikings are on the field. How do they attack Justin Jefferson? How do they attack that endeavor? On the one hand, D'Amico Ryans, ever since that Cleveland game late last season where it's the Browns, not the playoff game, but the blowout towards the end of the year where Amari Cooper had like 260 yards receiving, D'Amico Ryans has gone away from his norm and has not been afraid to take Derek Stingley Jr. and just put him on the best guy and have him travel, you know, play, you know, some zone, but with Stingley traveling with their best guy. They did it last week against DJ Moore. Stingley traveled with DJ Moore. When they faced the Browns again in the playoffs last year, Stingley traveled with Amari Cooper, and Amari Cooper wound up with like 40 yards receiving when he had just gotten 260 on him 3 weeks before that. So I'm anxious to see what D'Amico chooses to do. Stingley and Jefferson are very familiar with each other from their time at LSU as teammates. But I've, you know, along the lines of Belichick, you brought it up earlier, Anthony. I've seen a lot of people speculating. I guess there was a clip from one of the many media things that he does every week. He's doing like seven different things. And there was a clip that he had where he would talk about taking away the number one wide receiver. He would double the number one guy, put his best guy on the number two guy. And then, okay, you got to beat us with your third receiver. So if that were to be the way, and I could see the Texans attacking it that way, you double Jefferson with Kamari Lassiter and a safety, maybe Jimmy Ward. And then you put Stingley, have him traveling with Jordan Addison, who I know has also been on the injury report, but I'm assuming he's playing.
He didn't practice on Wednesday.
So maybe he doesn't play. Okay, so maybe. But so And then if he were to play, then it's up to Jalen. What is it? Jalen Naylor would be the one who's the third receiver for the Vikings right now. Like, so you got to beat us with that guy there. Now, it's easier said than done with Justin Jefferson, who I'm sure is no stranger to a good double team, Justin Jefferson, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was actually, you know, my next six pack thing was like, who's Darnold going to throw to? There was a huge play, maybe the biggest play of the game that the Vikings had to make. It was like a third and forever. It felt like against the Niners, and Jefferson was out. He had gone out earlier in the game. Yeah. Addison was out. Hawk still hasn't come back. Aaron Jones wasn't in the game.
Hawkinson was out, right? Was Hawkinson
right? Yeah.
Out?
Yeah. So it was Jefferson, Addison, Hawk, and Jones were all out of the game. So there's Sam Darnold is going there up to the line of scrimmage, and he's like, well,
is this the third preseason? Am I in the third preseason game? What is going on here? That's
funny. They're like creating players in the back to get him out there. You know, it's just, and so like my last, beer that we're going to open here as part of the six pack is who is Darnold going to throw to? Because if they do that, especially because it can, you know, that's what I would do if I were prepping for the Vikings, I would basically double and even triple team Justin Jefferson. They don't have anybody who's going to, you know, blow the top off of the defense. That's Addison's normal job. I don't think he's going to play. Mm-hmm. And then Hawkinson, like when they're working at their best, you have your three levels, Addison deep, Jefferson everywhere, Hawkinson underneath, and then your running backs. Like eventually, if they ever get healthy, they could be really, really good. But this week, I'm really nervous about Darnold's options.
Okay, so just to, in case Texan fans listening to this haven't been following the Vikings injury situation super closely like you and I would, Jefferson, you think, is going to play this week. He's got the quad injury, but he's I'd be surprised if he didn't play. What is Addison's injury right now?
He hurt his ankle.
Okay.
In week one, and it looked pretty bad. So I think he's probably going to miss. They haven't put him on IR, but I think he's going to miss some time. Jefferson lightly practiced yesterday.
He'll play.
And so I think he'll play.
Yeah.
Addison didn't practice. Hawk is still, I believe, on the IR. So it's a bit of a mess in terms of skill position players.
Yeah, which is good news for the Texans. So who's he gonna throw to? That's a great one. My last one in the six pack is it's not a sexy one, but it's special teams for the Texans. They've traditionally got some of the best special teams in the league, even when their team was crap two, three years ago. Frank Ross is one of the best special teams coordinators, but specifically the kicking game. If this thing does come down to field goals, I love the fact that they've got Kyme Fairbairn kicking indoors. The spread right now is I've seen all week. It's the Texans somewhere between like 2 and 3, like 2.5. Mm-hmm. It's the Texans have been a small favorite all week. Kyme Fairbairn's been the most valuable player on this football team through the first couple weeks of the season, which is crazy to say. I know that the other 52 guys, for the most part, have been sacrificing their bodies out there and going out and making, you know, making football plays. But Kyme Fairbairn has kicked 7 field goals the first 2 weeks of the season, 6 of which have been from 50 or more. A couple of them in that game against the Bears were 56 and 59. It's only supposed to be 54, but Laramie Tunsil false starts. Now, that'll do it. You know, he backs. Laramie's good for a couple of those, just so you know, Anthony. You're going to get a couple false starts with that loud noise in Laramie Tunsil. But I think it's going to be a close game, and I think that I think the kicking game is going to be a big, big part of what could decide this game. Either a mistake in the kicking game, possibly, but even more so with the Texans. It's so valuable, especially when you go on the road, to have a weapon that once you get to the other team's 40, you feel like, all right, we're at least going to come away with 3 here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weapon, you know, to be able to, like, so basically if you, you know, get a touchback and you start at the 30 and you know that all you really, like, in order to just get points, if the point is just to get points, all you really need to gain is like 40 yards or so
at the end of the half, when you take over the ball, at your own 32 yard line, that's all you're looking. If you got like the Texans did against the Bears, I mean, that field goal that Kyme Fairbairn kicked, the 59 yarder, was at the end of the half. Like if you start with the ball anywhere within, you know, 20 yards of midfield, that's all I'm looking at is like, okay, how far to get to the 40? You know, that gives him a chance. Okay, we just two first downs and we're there, you know, that kind of yep. thing.
So. Yeah, and, you know, you look at the other side of this, and the Vikings kicker is a rookie. They right. drafted Will Richard this year, and he's looked good. He has a boot. You know, he could definitely go, but you just never know how you're going to handle that situation as yeah. a rookie. So that's a good key point there. Quick side note, I grew up a UCLA fan. I didn't go to UCLA. My grandparents met there, so I've always had a soft spot. And yeah. My wife is a USC fan, so it makes it even more fun to root for UCLA. But Kyemi Fairbairn was there, you know, when I was in college and rooting for UCLA back then. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, this guy's good. Like, this guy's yeah. for sure good. I can't believe the career that Kyemi Fairbairn has had. It's unbelievable. He has a real case to make as, like, the best kicker in the sport right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, early on, for sure. I mean, he was AFC yeah. Special Teams Player of the Week. This week, he could have been in week one also, except Chris Boswell kicked 6 field goals for the Steelers in a game where they scored 18 points. He kicked he had all the points. Kaimi's been, it's been interesting. This was not who he was when he got here. He was an undrafted free agent that they kept on the practice squad, if I recall, when they had a veteran kicker on the team, but they kept Kaimi around, which says something when you're using up a practice. And this is back before the days of the 16-man practice squad. You know, the practice yeah. squads were much smaller, but they kept Kaimi around, and then he became the starting kicker the next year. He's in his 8th season now. It's really wild. Like, he's been around a while now, and anybody who's been here 8 years has seen some stuff, man. Like, you know, through the Bill O'Brien yeah. years and the Jack Easterby years and things like that. But
he's kicking with the pain of all the Texans fans who had to live.
He
to
is,
this
man. I tell you what, he is. And it was funny because he got his first big contract was given to him by Bill O'Brien the year that Bill O'Brien was the GM, and Bill was giving out just some of the worst contracts ever. It was so bad. So it's yeah. almost like Kaimi, his contract got thrown in with these other ones that were really bad. So it's like, you know, he unfortunately it's the opposite of one bad apple spoils the bunch. It was like a barrel of bad apples, and they took Kaimi's contract and threw it in the barrel. Like, you're bad too. but this, what he is now, and again, it's only 2 games into this season, but my God, like, that he's been so automatic from 50. And these aren't even, none of them have been dramatic in terms of, like, in terms of the length or up against the upright. Like, yeah, man, like, he is, you can tell, like, every single kick, you know, we watch from the press box, which is on the side, way high up. We're, like, literally near the roof of the stadium in the press box. I don't know that there's a stadium in the NFL where the vantage point for the press box is higher up than NRG Stadium. So mm-hmm. we're along the side behind the Texans bench, and every single one of Kaimi's kicks this past week, immediately as soon as he kicks it, we're like, okay, well, no, we know it's got the distance. Now we just got to look at the refs and see if it makes it inside the uprights here. That's who I look at. I just look to see if they come out and doing the field goal good sign. But every single kick, you can tell 10 feet after it leaves his toe, like, okay, well, this thing's got the distance. That's the only, so the only drama is, did he hit this thing left or right? You know what I mean?
And there hasn't been drama. Like, it's been crazy to watch. Like, yeah. you know, cause they're putting him out there for, like, what did he make? Like, 6 straight. He's made 6 straight 50 plus yarders to start the year.
He's got 6. He's got
5.
He's got 7. Yeah. Well, here. Okay. Yeah. I'll give you the in terms of history, no kicker had ever made 5 50-plus yard field goals in any 2-week span in the history of the league. Any 2-week span, not the first 2 weeks of any 2-week span. So he made 5. He made 6, but nobody had even made 5. So he ended up making 6 50-yard field goals. Nobody's done that in a 2-week period. No kicker has ever had in their careers 2 games where they've had 3 50-plus yard field goals in 2 games. Like, and Kaimi did them back-to-back weeks, you know, like nobody's done that even where, I did it in week 18 or I did it in 2018 and again in 2023. Nobody's ever done that. He did them both, and they've been in back-to-back weeks. And the other funny thing is he's made 7 field goals this year, actually, 6 50 plus. The 7th one is 47 yards. So he hasn't even had any chip shots this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been wild, and I think that'll be a key thing for Sunday. Before we cut out here, what's your prediction for the game on Sunday?
Yeah, I would take the Texans. I mean, I've you know, I I've been thoroughly, I've really enjoyed the start to the Viking season, and I'm waiting for other, you know, the other shoe to drop or whatever. And it's not even about that. Like, I just think it's a tough matchup, and specifically, you know, we talked about how Brian Flores loves to, you know, coach the defense and stuff like that. But D'Amico Ryans has that same kind of mentality defensively, and it just trickles on throughout that organization, I feel like. And, if you allow that Texans defense to get downhill and they don't have to worry about anybody behind them, that seems like a really tough spot to put even a good quarterback. And the Vikings have Sam Darnold.
Yeah. Well, and the Texans have the luxury of those two corners, Lassiter and Stingley, that they can, that's why they could send eight guys at Caleb Williams last week, because they've got corners back there that can man up on, you know, Roma Dunze and DJ Moore. So, and if the Vikings are depleted in the receiving core, then that's going to be an issue. I've got it as a close game. I've got it 23-20. Three Kymie field goals, a couple of touchdowns, feels about right. I think there's a reason the spread's -2.5 Texans. That feels about right to me. So I say I've got 23-20 Texans. I think it's going to be a hell of a game, man. I think the atmosphere is going to be crazy. That should be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a Vikings fan base that is just waiting for something to really get behind. And if they, you know, they beat the Niners this last week, in Minnesota, they haven't lost to the Niners. It's one of the weirder stats in all of football. Like, the Niners haven't beaten them in 30 something years in Minnesota.
Really? In Minnesota? Yeah, okay. Wow. That goes back to probably that might go back 30 years. It wouldn't go back pre Metrodome, but damn, pretty close. Like, the Metrodome was like a mid-80s building. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember when it was ahead of its time, and then it quickly wasn't. And then I bring that up because the Niners travel well. Mm-hmm. But there was a catch that Jusic made, and you just heard from the crowd. And I think it's because to this point, like, Vikings fans didn't really know how to feel about the team. But now that they picked up that win, and I don't think the Texans travel quite as well as the Niners do, I do think it'll be a pretty rambunctious crowd, especially if the Vikings get a touchdown early. If they get a little bit of momentum in this one, I think that's where the Texans would be, you know, a little nervous.
Vikings or Texans still looking for their first win ever against the Vikings. They are 0-5. Well, they don't play very much because AFC, NFC kind of thing, but they are 0-5. 0-5. I'll give you a little factoid here. 0-5. Lifetime against the Vikings, and in every single game the Vikings have led by double digits at halftime. They've led by at least 10 at halftime. And now some of those games got close. There was an overtime game, and but there have been other Viking games that hold significant historical perspective for Texan fans. 2012, that was the year Christian Ponder was the starting quarterback. That was Adrian Peterson's MVP year, if I'm not mistaken. They went into the Texans could have clinched a bye in the first round of the playoffs in week 16 of the season. They went into NRG Stadium and housed them 23-6. There's that. And then 4 years ago at NRG Stadium, that was the COVID year, the Vikings beat the Texans in week 4, and the next day Bill O'Brien got fired.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, you're not going to do any better than that. That was beautiful. Hey, Anthony, man, I appreciate it. Tell the people once again where they can get all your stuff, dude.
You know what? It's best just to probably follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. That's where I put my my football thoughts and stuff like that. So follow me there. And then, if you ever care to, check out an NBA show, check out Basketball Passport. That's where we'll be talking about some Rocket stuff, too.
Give me your Twitter account one more time. I think I talked over you a little bit there.
Yeah, at Anthony Irwin LA is where you can find me there on Twitter.
Irwin with an I. Mm-hmm. Irwin with an I. There you go. All right, at Anthony Irwin LA. Anthony, I enjoyed this, man. We'll have to, when the Texans meet the Vikings in the Super Bowl this year, we'll do this all over again.
Perfect. Sounds great.
All right, dude. Appreciate you, man. Good stuff. That is my man, Anthony Irwin, the producer of this year's podcast. All right, before I get out, a couple administrative items. Give us a quick hit on the subscribe button. Subscribe, rate, review the podcast. We're in week 3 now. You're going to get it automatically. It costs nothing to subscribe. Zero. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And HOU mailbag@gmail.com. HOU mailbag@gmail.com. Emails are popping, man. I think I had twice as many emails last week as I normally have. So the Texans, it is translating 67% Texans ratings are up locally here in Houston on TV. So that is translating. I can corroborate that it is directly correlated to the amount of email that I get about this here podcast. So with that, with big thanks to Anthony Irwin for not only participating in the podcast, but producing it today. I am Sean Pendergast. We are out of time. We will see all of you Sunday evening after the postgame show is over here in Houston with a recap of the Vikings and the Texans. Until then, have a great weekend.